Hi, everyone. Before we start today's Walkthird episode, I'm announcing that this will be the season finale of the Walkthird show. I will be back, but I want to take some time to review the shows of season one and make season two the best. A huge thank you to my season one guests, Roland Pacheco, Ian Shroob, James Reed, Denzel Garcia, and this episode's guest, Bella Tapia. Go listen to those shows now. They're awesome. Hello and welcome to the Walkthird Show. I am your host, Walkthird, Joaquin Guacamole. This is a variety interview show that asks the question, are you afraid of ghosts? Today for my season finale, I am joined by Miss Bella Tapia.
I can't think of a particular moment. I know that we really started to get to know each other when we were on the media team. But I can't think of, like, the moment that we, like, met. I know we always, like, saw each other in passing, but I think media team is, like, it was just one of those things where we didn't know each other, and then suddenly we were really cool with each other.
That kind of goes with any sort of, like, team when you're trying to capture or document, is that you just kind of get to know each other as you're doing it. Mm-hmm. At least in my opinion. That's kind of how you just start to form a bond with these people. How do you remember, what one of our favorite moments that we've had together?
Oh my God, there's too many to count, but one of my favorite moments probably was the scaffolding. Do you remember that?
Yeah. there's documented proof about the scaffolding. We should give
you
a little
bit of
background.
You want to tell them, Joaquin? Yeah.
Wait, was there a specific thing I did? So here's why we were up on the, so... anybody from UC Berkeley that's listening to the podcast, which is probably nobody, me and Bella, we were at Edge Youth Leadership, which was at UC Berkeley 1 year. And every year we have a big task to take a picture of everybody that attends the seminar. And so this was a year where we really had, it was for some reason, we just had less access to the buildings as possible. But there was a lot of scaffolding from some paint jobs that were occurring. And so me and Bella did some awesome brainstorming and thought, we could just climb the scaffolding. We can get up on the top.
Like, it's not dangerous.
Scary whatsoever. It's not dangerous. It felt dangerous. What? Is there something I'm forgetting from the story, though?
I think it was just the experience overall. Call me crazy, and I might be confusing you with, like, someone else from, like, a completely different memory from Edge. But did you, like, rip your sweats on the scaffolding at one point, or am I thinking of someone else?
Did I rip my sweats? You know, just to save the embarrassment of someone else, I'll say that I did.
Okay.
And I'm okay with taking that fall.
I might be confusing that. But then I also remember, so just that trip, or, like, not that trip, that seminar was just, like, I think... held a lot of my favorite memories, like, with you. So there was that. I think that was also one of the many years that you would, like, stack, like, snacks on people that were sleeping. Like, yeah. Like the Cheez-Its. Yeah. So that was a fun memory. The scaffolding overall, because it was just incredibly dangerous and, like, trying to get up there was funny. But then I remember, you probably don't remember this that well, but we had to take pictures of each committee. And it was you and I working together. And I remember at one point, it was like Raquel and like a few other people. I don't remember which committee it was. And they had jackets on. And they're like, man, we need somewhere to put our jackets. And I think it was, I don't know which committee it was. And instead of putting their jackets on a bench or like handing them to you like normal people, they just like stacked them all on top of like my head and like my shoulders. And so here I was trying to take a picture while having all these jackets on top of me. And, you know, instead of being a great person, Joaquin, and being like, let me take those jackets that are on top of you, you took a selfie with me. and that is what you did. That is how you contributed.
I might have gave you one of my jackets too. I imagined like one of those time lapse pictures of somebody putting on a bunch of jackets at the same time, but
yeah,
with your body inside of it.
That's exactly what it was. It was like all stacked on like my shoulders. I'm like, are you guys kidding me? Like, you could not literally put this on a bench that is like maybe 2 feet away. But that was just kind of goes to like the sense of humor and the camaraderie with like the seminar. There, obviously, there was no like ill feelings toward it or anything, but it was just a funny memory, you know?
You just, yeah, it's kind of like a one of those improv things. Like, you just like, yes, and what else can I do? What else, where else can yes. we take this kind of
photographer and coat rack?
Yeah. And I imagine we made it, maybe like made a lanyard for you that said coat rack and photographer or something like that.
Yeah. Wait, wasn't that also the year of putting the pieces together?
Oh, when, yeah. so every year Edge has a theme, and one of the, 1 year the theme was putting the pieces together. And you have like little puzzle pieces on all of the program, and every lanyard has this thing that says putting the pieces together, but it didn't say together, it said toe-gether. And I don't think anybody noticed. Did people notice right away, or did, I felt like it wasn't until day two of the whole seminar that people started to notice it.
So when we started putting the lanyards together, I think is when people started noticing. And tell me why. I mean, I remember only hearing from you initially that you're like putting the pieces together, and like you were the person that I heard it from. It wasn't like a grand announcement that we made. It was like kind of like it just kind of trickled down from everyone hearing about it and then noticing on their lanyard. And I noticed it when you had mentioned it.
I have a feeling. Was I senior director for that too? Because that would have, like, I would have directly been responsible for that.
Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if you were. I wasn't, okay, so you know, I wasn't a director.
That, my
so
job. That must yeah. have,
it's okay. I make mistakes like that too all the time. It's okay. I think you were senior director that year, honestly.
Oh, man. And I haven't been since.
Yes, because you
but for other reasons.
A higher position. Yeah.
Because I got a higher position. Well, we miss you around Edge. We have a lot of great memories, obviously. But you've moved on to some great projects. And one just happened recently. Is there anyone that you want to talk about right off the bat? I have one that I wanted to talk about called I See Stars Cabaret.
Yes, yes. That's like the one of the main ones at the moment. So I See Stars was back in November, and we have our second installment, which is going to be called Giant Plans. You guys are hearing it here first. And that one is coming out, I think, sometime in February. It might be in March, as we are kind of realizing how much bigger we want to make it. But
what is I See Stars? Because the only thing I know about is that you were a collaborator and a producer for it. So what's kind of like the 30-second elevator pitch of what I See Stars is?
Yeah, so I See Stars came out of seeing what... So we're a theater, basically, a really small theater in the Bay Area, Pacifica Spindrift Players. And I See Stars came out of seeing how other theaters were innovating during the time, these weird COVID-19 times. And we noticed a lot of Zoom productions, and we really admired how other theaters were innovating in such a and creating theater in such a weird time. So we wanted to innovate as well. And so we wanted to do a cabaret that highlighted Bay Area performers and was and had like this like theme of like championing like in inclusion and diversity. And so that's pretty much what it was. It was a cabaret, and it was pre-recorded, professionally produced, or semi-professionally produced music videos, but the event itself was live. So we would interview a performer, ask him some rapid-fire theater questions, and then after that, play the video that we worked on with them. And that was pretty much what it was. And we have our second installment coming in soon, which is really exciting because it grew after that.
How was it live? You asked some questions. Was it a virtual experience? Where was it produced at? Like where could people have seen it?
Yeah, so you would buy tickets on, I think it was on the stage, but it was essentially Zoom that you were on. So we'd have all the actors in on Zoom, me and my co-host Doug, who is also my co-producer and director. We're the ones that were hosting the event. And then anytime an actor, it was their turn, they would turn on their cameras and we would ask them their questions and then play their video. And so that was what it was like. So the virtual live event, so you were there, you were able to connect your computer to your TV if you wanted to be able to watch it live. But yeah, that was pretty much the degree of it. It was really cool.
What can people expect from the second installment that they may not have gotten in the first?
Expect better production value, I think. I know that sounds kind of weird to say, but like, and maybe even something that you might expect, but with the initial IC Stars, no, at least as far as we knew, no other theater in the area was doing what we were doing. So we had nowhere to go to. We had nowhere to go to for advice. It was just purely, just you know, we had one person, Doug, who's really good at that kind of concept. So the concept was mainly his idea, and like more administrative work and putting the pieces together, so to say, like making sure that we had Zoom as an area that we can rely on to broadcast this. And I was more of the video production element of it and making sure that we were coming up with good video concepts for each performer, working with the performers directly and making sure that we would do it in a time frame that was really short, but like also still getting really good footage and like keeping it safe and making sure we were following all safety protocols. So better production value because there was more planning on our part because we knew that like, hey, we can be more creative with this stuff. It doesn't just have to be, you know, locked off on a tripod or us just recording and running through something a few times. We can come up with blocking for these actors like we would have done, you know, previously. It was reminding actors to, because they would record in a recording studio professionally with another local recording studio in the area. It was also reminding actors, like, just on a production standpoint, like, listen to yourself after you're done recording and memorize the way that you sound. So when you lip sync, it matches up and, like, also comes off as realistic in that the choices that you made singing match up with the acting choices that you're going to make in video. It's like a movie, so it's going to be more cinematic this time around, you know?
What do you think? I love that you're going to take what you've learned from the last one and put it towards this one. And like you said, I think that you was kind of awesome was that you really didn't have to stand by any sort of rules because, like you said, you're the only theater in the area that was creating this kind of experience for the not only local level, but because it's based on it's virtual, you can really extend it to other parts of the world. Mm-hmm. What do you think helped prepare you for creating that experience for these people?
What prepared? That's a good question. You really kind of summed me.
I know, right? Stuff you don't think about.
Yeah. So what prepared me for that kind of experience? I think, okay, so I'm going to try and find a way to put this in a way that makes sense. So I come from both a theater background and from a filmmaking background. And when I was choosing a major, and which is media, so that includes filmmaking, I remember thinking, man, it sucks initially that I'm going to have to give up my love for musical theater because I'll never be able to fuse the two. They just live in two separate worlds. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to do both, and that's going to suck. So it sucks that I have to choose this one thing. As obviously time has gone on, and we're in these, we're living in the COVID-19 era, I now have this wonderful opportunity to fuse my two loves, two things that I never thought I would be able to fuse before. So I have the experience of musical theater, and I'm not just some random, you know, video producer that's kind of trying to come up with concepts for musicals or performances that I don't know, because they're covers of musical theater songs. So I'm not coming up with concepts on stuff I don't know. It's all on stuff that I know and love. And so I can create a film experience that still just, that does justice for the theatrical, like, part of it, but also still do it in an innovative way where, hey, I'm watching this performer in IC Stars, and I'm getting a different experience if I were to watch this live. And the same can go if you know, if I was watching this person live, I wouldn't be getting the same experience as if I was watching it, you know, as a filmed video. So does that kind of make sense, having both of those and fusing them together?
Yeah, it reminds me of two different types of ways to watch theater at home, which has been like, mm-hmm. One, watching recorded, a professionally recorded version of a staged show, mm-hmm. as well as like the movies that are created based off of musicals. So, mm-hmm. probably, so one example for a professionally recorded theater production that I, at least the one that comes to mind for myself right now is, one for a young audience would be like Legally Blonde, the musical. Mm-hmm. And then there's one I'm thinking of right away is Sweeney Todd musical from maybe like 20, mm-hmm. 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But then you have stuff like The Prom or mm-hmm. The Producers that
yeah.
have kind of created their own thing where you still have some of those things that you love from the musicals and you're able to put, mm-hmm. they were able to kind of put a different, they were able to have a little bit more control over like the three-dimensional aspect of it. Kind of reminds me of mm-hmm. when they're creating like these comic books, but then they're creating movies off these comic books and you're seeing more of a, like a world that they've created. So, mm-hmm. with those in mind, what are some of the, if you were to choose between a recorded stage production and a movie, give me your favorite stage production recording that you love, and then also give me mm-hmm. your favorite movie that was based off a musical or stage production.
That's tough. Okay, that's right? Tough. And I get into, you know, it's interesting. I get into this conversation about movie musicals and those adaptations so much, and it's something that's like a really big, like it's a hot topic for me. So I'm it's interesting that you're asking this question. So let's see.
We'll talk about your podcast here in a second too.
Yeah. Favorite professionally recorded musical. I'm going to sound so basic, but I really love the way that Hamilton was filmed from more of a creative standpoint, and Newsies actually. So I'm between those two because I feel like you see Legally Blonde and it looks really, I've watched like a lot of, I have the Broadway HD subscription. So I watch a lot of like professionally recorded musicals, and I feel like those two were the most innovative. They took multiple days to film to get some of those really cool like crane shots and all that, and you're adding those like filmmaking techniques into musical theater, so you're able to see parts of a show that you wouldn't be able to see from sitting in a seat. And that's why watching something like Hamilton, because I saw Hamilton luckily 3 times live, and then was able to see the professionally recorded show on Disney Plus, and it hit home for me in a different way because I was able to see their faces and I was always sitting so far away. So that was something that did wonders for me. So I think you could see a show multiple times, especially something like Hamilton that's so like deep and like convoluted, like you could see it multiple times in person, but you're going to get a different experience watching it on screen because there's just only so much that you could see, and like you can press rewind and you have those options that you wouldn't have in person.
There's something about like an extreme close-up that yeah. can really change your perception of what a scene is actually about.
Exactly. And like, because you're still, I mean, it's interesting because you have, obviously you have the, people could look at it and just say, you're just recording a live stage production and that's all it is. There's nothing creative it doesn't require anything creative. But then when you think about it, you have to think about those in a very smart way. You can't have everything just as a wide shot. You need to be very deliberate with where you want those close-ups to be, where you want those nice little crane shots to be, because you're manipulating your viewer in essence to see what you want them to see in that moment. Like I watched Hamilton each time live, a different part made me cry because I was focusing on a different element. First time it was comprehension, so I think it was like Philip's death that made me cry. The second time it was Hamilton's death that made me cry. The third time, I can't even remember because just so much tears. But like then when I watched it live, the very end with Eliza was what really, really, really had me bawling my eyes out, because it was something that I had never noticed. And I'm not sure if it was Philippa Sue, who played Eliza in the original cast, that got me with her performance.
Because I haven't seen it live, but I remember watching that last scene, because I know exactly what you're talking about, where the everything faded, the credits were rolling. I was like, why didn't they call this Eliza the whole time? This movie, it felt like the whole story was kind of, even though there was a lot of elements that was Hamilton and a lot of it was following him, I'm like, she's really the star. She's the reason why we even still think about Hamilton. It's because she used herself as like, she was able to start the first orphanage in the country.
It was the first private orphanage. First private orphanage.
Yeah. Wait, were there publics?
I challenge
at that point?
You this. I think, okay, I don't challenge. Know, but yeah, it, she said first private orphanage. So I challenge you this, though, Joaquin, when you think about that, because I have the same thoughts as you, but I challenge you this. The show is called Hamilton. Her last name was also Hamilton. Which Hamilton were they talking about?
Get out of here. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Look at you just dropping bombs on me. On my own show, Bella. On my own show. I gotta take a breath. Oh my gosh. So we have a staged recording on Disney Plus of Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Now we have a movie version of The Prom. Have you seen Prom, by the way? I haven't seen Prom.
I have not taken I haven't seen the movie adaptation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Why haven't you seen the movie adaptation? I wonder.
In all honesty, my watch list for TV has just been really crazy lately. So that's part of the reason. It's like having other things that I'm kind of prioritizing watching. But, if I
had an interesting conversation. I was going to say, I had an interesting conversation with one of my previous guests, James, about how they use actors on stage and how they use actors in movies. And so if you had seen Prom, I'd say like, what's kind of your feelings about like how they use actors, how they use movies? Let me pose this question to you, because I've kind of already had that conversation with James previously. If and when they make a Hamilton musical movie, like official feature, what would you want from that feature? What is something you think that they can do different with the movie that they can't do? Like, you've seen it four times. What is something that they can do different with a movie that they couldn't do with this staged pseudo recording that they did on Disney Plus?
So what's interesting is it's not so much what the production couldn't do, but I think it's playing with one of the strengths that the live production has and applying it to film. So I don't think that there's anything that the movie could necessarily capture that the live recording couldn't. What I'm thinking is this. Whenever I've explained Hamilton to people, I say that it moves like a machine. That's what it feels like. It feels like an old-fashioned machine. It's very mechanical. Every part matters. If one piece breaks, then the rest of it's going to fall apart. So everyone needs to be really on point with it. The movie would need to function in a similar way for me to really enjoy it. Because the whole idea of history is if one person was gone, it would fall apart. It would not be the same story that we're looking at today. So then in turn, the stage production feels that way because they use every ensemble member, every dancer, as a moving set piece and really integrate them as this greater machine. And if they weren't there, then it would fall apart. The movie would need to feel the same way. I'm not exactly sure how. Maybe that has to do with editing, because that's one thing that you can't do in musical theater is like have really cool cuts and all that. And, you know, if I had a $1 million idea, I would need Disney to contract me personally so I can cash in on that. But, what it really comes down to me is like playing up on one of the strengths, because at least for me, I'm like Hamilton, it's so convoluted already that I don't think that there's anything that the stage adaptation is missing for me. It would have to be just playing up one of the strengths and driving it home, you know? If we're talking about something like In the Heights, though, then maybe I can give you a little bit more of an idea as to, because I mean,
that,
they are
that
coming
is coming
up
out,
a movie
isn't
for
it?
That.
That's been filmed, and it is.
It's already been filmed, and it was going to be
is
released
that a Disney thing as well?
Back in June. No, not as of right now. Okay. So it was going to be released back last summer, and then they have been delaying it because they're intent on having a theatrical release for it.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So,
man, I could talk about all this for hours.
Same.
Seriously. How much... Let's segue over to your podcast.
Totally.
Yes. So you have a podcast that is soon. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's going to be an episode out by the time this is posted?
There might be. There might be. I can't guarantee anything yet, but there might be.
Okay.
I know.
Okay. Here's the thing. Here's the name of the podcast, which I think is the best name that it could be. It tells you everything you need to know for anybody that knows about Bella. The name of the podcast is called Denny's Parking Lot. You told me that, and I thought, that is the best name. I know, I'm hooked. I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you want to, what type of audience you want, everything. Are you excited about the show?
I'm so excited about it.
Good.
Episodes? Good. Yes. So we've recorded
episodes. You recorded an episode already. You host alongside your friend, AJ. Tell me a little bit about the show and how is it different from maybe the conversation we've been having for the last few minutes? What could people expect from this podcast?
Yeah, totally. So Denny's Parking Lot is, I can go into detail about the title a little bit later, but Denny's Parking Lot is your one-stop shop for a musical theater conversation. So, we are going to have monthly themes for each episode. So we're looking at something like mother-daughter relationships, or we're looking at musicals, revolutionary musicals, or we're looking at musicals that focus on homelessness and, you know, that sort of thing. And so there's those different monthly themes, and each episode within those monthly themes are going to, follow the monthly themes. And we're going to talk about each episode and each musical in relation to the theme that it falls under for us. And we're going to be having some special bonus episodes that will come out every so often that will be maybe straying away from the theme that we chose for the month. But that's what you could expect is musical theater conversations. We cover things like diversity, like in casting. We talk about the different productions. So me and AJ have been aiming to watch different productions as much as we can. So if it's not a production that we've already seen live, then we try and find a recording online. If maybe she can see a different lead and I can see another lead as well, we like to compare the leads and be like, hey, this person gave me this, you know, vibe, and this is an incredible choice that they made in comparison to maybe the actor that AJ was looking at. And so we compared that. We do.
You're
like
really trying hard
kind of
not to give too much about this, are you?
I know.
I can see it in your eyes.
I like surprise.
I get it. They're like, you don't want to give too much about these lead actors or like who, you have a plan. You just, all you really need to know is if you like musical theater, you're going to like this show, I guess. But I think it was interesting that you said, I do have a little bit of data that I want to share with you, because I was trying to look up the show on Apple Podcasts, and I think, so obviously it's not there yet because there's no episodes posted yet. But no. I found some interesting search results when I looked up Denny's Parking Lot I wanted to share with you. Okay. And I just want to get your reaction on them. So here's the first one. I have five. One.
Okay.
My sixth grade crush.
Okay.
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 The next one might be my favorite. A date with Dateline. The NBC, yes, at Dateline, yes, yes. Okay.
Okay.
All right, let me readjust for this one. Number three, Morbid, a true crime podcast.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Do Not Harm, number four. And finally, okay, which I think was perfect, A Girl and Her Mother-in-Law. Which actually kind of sounds like something you guys were talking about, too.
Mother-daughter relationships, yes. Yeah. It is crazy. Interesting search results.
So you guys have some stiff competition when it comes to SEO searching, obviously.
I think so, too. I think so, too. How are we going to possibly compete with my sixth grade crush? I don't know.
I don't know either. I have no idea how. So, anyway... Yeah, that's good luck. I'm excited to hear the first episode.
Yeah. I would also be happy real quick to kind of describe what I mean when I say Denny's parking lot, because I also realize that there's some people that might not know. Maybe people that are thinking about dipping their toes into musical theater, but not quite knowing what that means. Yeah.
When I heard it, I was like, okay, if people don't know what Denny's parking lot means, you're probably not going to understand. But yeah, give your description. Give your description.
Let me give my description, because this is always – when we came up with the name, I loved the name, but I was also so insecure that people that maybe didn't know musical theater quite well and maybe wanted to dip their toes into it were going to feel like, what the fuck is this? And so Denny's parking lot, if you are – if you've basically done theater at all, even whether that's musical theater or like plays or anything like that, Denny's parking lot is in reference to maybe you're in high school or you're middle school or even community level. And, you know, after a show, when you go to Denny's and you're super obnoxious with your castmates and your crewmates and
your adrenaline's on high and you just.
Yeah. You're ordering milkshakes at 11 p.m. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so Denny's parking lot is for the theater kid that would love to go to Denny's after each show with their friends. But it's also even more so for the kid that wouldn't want it to end and would stick in the parking lot after saying their goodbyes inside the diner, would stick around in the parking lot and try to keep the conversation going for as long as possible because they just loved it that much. Does that kind of make sense?
It does. It does. I'm so excited for it. I don't think you have anything to worry about, but of course I'm just one person. So we'll see how it goes. If there's any sort of, I do want to give one piece of feedback to you. When you guys do publish the show, and I mean, you have David who, you know, he's successful in podcasting and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Without giving too much away. The title of the title that you put in that you type out, that's going to be your SEO right there. There's some in the description, but Denny's parking lot, maybe colon. And I think you even put it on your logo. It's like a theater.
Yeah. So it's Denny's parking lot, a musical theater.
Mm-hmm. A musical.
Yeah.
Theater.
So perfect. That is the name of it. Yeah.
There you go.
A musical theater podcast is a full name. Yeah.
People are going to find it just based on that. And then you're going to get a studio and you're just going to all that. Okay. Let's do a speed round of questions. Because like you said, let's remind the guests that, or the audience that you're a filmmaker, you are a graphic designer, you are a photographer. Mm-hmm. And so I have some, a speed round of questions that I think that the audience might want to know. So, you ready? You ready to go?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
As a filmmaker, what are three things that you cannot live without?
Okay. Well, obviously one would be Adobe Premiere editing Adobe software. Premiere.
Cool.
A tripod. It's so universal. If you need a stabilizer, like a makeshift stabilizer, and then obviously like for like more like movement oriented shots, or you just need like a still shot, it works as both. At least that's what I've found. So you got your multi-use tripod right there. And then obviously a camera. That's all you need. You can play with lighting any sort of way that you want. You could use daylight. You can use artificial lighting that's already in the area that you're in, but you can't do anything unless you have a camera some sort of stabilization, which some people might argue with me on, but I think stabilization is pretty important. And then obviously something to edit with. So yeah, those are my three.
What is your camera? We know your editing software of choice, obviously, Adobe Premiere. Mm-hmm. What is your mm-hmm. camera of choice?
My camera of choice is a Sony A7 III.
Do you have a different camera for photography too?
As of right now, because I just got my A7 III like maybe like 6 months ago. So as of right now, it's my only photography camera, but I don't intend on keeping it as just as like a multi-use camera. I want it to eventually be just my video camera, but I just need to save a little bit more money for a photography camera when I do decide to get one.
What camera? I imagine you've done some research. What kind of camera would you want? I'm getting my audience to pay for it.
Okay. So
I don't think it's going to happen. But.
My Sony, it's always worth a try, you know. But my Sony camera is a mirrorless camera. The most research that I've done is that I know that I want to get a DSLR just because I have more experience initially with a DSLR. So that's pretty much what it is. DSLR, but I don't, and basically a not mirrorless camera for photography.
All right. If anybody in our audience wants to send a mirrorless camera.
Canon.
Canon, mirrorless Canon yeah. camera. Just
No. DSLR, it, not mirrorless.
Just put it, whatever she wants, put it into a box. Just put United States on it, California. Just put it in the USPS and we'll see if it gets to her.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So as an artist, let's like. Graphic, it, actually just anything, because this is like kind of everything, mm-hmm. film, graphic design, photography. What mm-hmm. is the most ridiculous thing, in your opinion, that you've gotten paid for?
That's tough.
You ever have those projects where you're like, I can't believe that I'm getting paid for this, or I've had a few of those moments.
Okay. Well, so this one, I mean, like, I really like the work that I did for it. But I guess for me, I won't disclose the amount, but I just couldn't believe how much I got paid for it more so. It wasn't even like the project in it. Because I feel like I haven't done a weird project so far, like knock on wood. But like one project that I got paid a ridiculous amount of money for that I did not think was worth it because I spent maybe a total of like 20 minutes working on it was this drawing for this theater event in the area. And I was basically making each of their characters look like a neon sign, if that makes sense. It looked really cool. It was supposed to evoke this sort of like 80s feel to it. And the poster looked really cool. I was really proud of it. It's on my website. But like the amount that I got for it, I thought was ridiculous. And I was like, oh, okay. Like that's for me where the absurdity lies in, not so much the content. Like I usually won't create something unless I really believe in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you ever think that... Do you ever kind of have that conversation with yourself where you're like, maybe I am not charging enough for my work?
I had that epiphany kind of recently when I was putting together my website and was coming up with rates, especially when it came to graphic design stuff. I was like, man, I'm like kind of lowballing myself here considering how much time and effort I put into it. So I did recently raise my rates for like, pretty much everything, but I also did come up with like a better idea of how I'm gonna gauge for those rates as opposed to before. I would like free. I wasn't as
kind of like how you changed the service to like kind of make sense why you raised the rates at all. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So when I mean I have more gear than I had initially, and I think I was going based on the amount of gear that I had maybe 2 years ago, and like. The resources that I was working with 2+ years ago that I was like, oh, like that's how, at least 2 years ago, I had like the perfect rates, like what I thought. And even still, I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right. But now I'm at this point where I'm like, I've acquired and I've spent so much more money on like learning and getting more stuff to make higher quality work that it makes sense to raise my rates at this point.
Yeah. 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 That's great. Mm-hmm. Good. I'm just looking out for you for that one.
I appreciate it.
So you're producing a podcast soon called Denny's Parking Lot, a musical theater podcast. Yeah. Does Denny's know about it?
Denny's does not know about it.
All right, moving on. Do you know a person named? Do you know a person named Denny?
I know a person named Danny, but not Denny.
Probably maybe a Dennis or a Denise.
Oh, I know a Dennis, actually.
You can call him Denny now. Yeah. Just have his picture, like his face, as the logo like, for now on.
Denny's, it was not about you. It was about my friend.
It was about my friend Dennis. Yeah. name your top three. I was going to say graphic designers, but name your top three just designers that you love or respect.
You're asking me like the hardest question ever. You're asking me a very hard question because I'm. That have even like influenced me.
Yeah.
Because I'm such a person that just has trouble picking any sort of favorite thing. Let's see. Favorite designers. Well, okay. So like, I can never think of a particular.
Top three in your mind, too.
Okay. So I have trouble putting names to things. So I'll say things that have inspired me because it's more so like work that I see that inspires me. So The New Yorker and the artwork there really inspires me. I feel like it's this perfect balance between like polished with its like really nice serif fonts and a little bit more rough handmade looking stuff with its like illustrations at times. So and I feel like that like captures me as a person, and even in my website and other things, I'm like a little rough around the edges but still polished with a nice little serif font whenever I need to be. That's like the best way that I think I describe my style. So The New Yorker as a whole, let me think. Man, I feel like I'm going to say like everything Condé Nast, like anything under the Condé Nast like company has always inspired me. So I was going to say Bon Appetit next in the way that like they take their food photography and like their website design, oh my God, is so beautiful. And I don't know who works on Bon Appetit's website. Obviously, they have their own team for it, but I commend them because their website is so nice to swipe through on all. Oh,
they're definitely a listener to the show, so we'll have them reach out to you.
Good, good.
I'm sure they want to.
Good, good.
To know.
Well, my website was very much inspired by Bon Appetit and the way that their website looks, because it looks so nice on iOS, on iPadOS, on macOS. It looks so nice no matter where you look at it on. And so that's more of like
a UX design sort of thing. And it's so hard to make that kind of balance of good for desktop and good for mobile.
Exactly.
I was working for hours on something a few days ago on that.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I know exactly that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's like one design element that I feel like I really like. Like Bon Appetit, like they're doing it right when it comes to UX design, because it's super fun to navigate their site because the visuals and the colors are super bright and poppy, and like everything's just so fluid when you move through it. And like when you go onto their like healthiest tab, it functions differently than their like than their basically tab, and so you get a different vibe each time you go onto a different sub tab. So that's nice. And then I'm trying to think top three. So New Yorker, Bon Appetit. I'm trying to think of what else. I feel like it really comes down to those two. So two like very rich Condé Nast companies are really my favorites right there. And like favorite designs. Yeah.
I think we learned a lot about you in this. Just from this one question. That's what I was hoping for. So one of the reasons you're VP of marketing for Spindrift, Pacifica Spindrift Players, is because you've also acted with them. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or am I wrong? I thought it was.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm right.
Yeah. You're
right. I'm good. I know you better than I thought I knew you. What was your favorite role? What was your favorite role? Actually, if you could act, if you could drop everything that you're doing and go back and play a certain role that you've done before, who would it be and why?
That's hard. So I think there's a differentiation for me between favorite
tomorrow.
Role and favorite
I'm saying
show.
Tomorrow. Just if you're like, I would drop everything for this.
Are we talking only at? Are we talking only Pacifica Spindrift players? Or are we talking like all theaters?
Everything. The only reason I said that is because you are an actress. That's what you were.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, I think it would be something. I think it would be something at Pacifica. So if I were to drop everything, probably Your Good Man Charlie Brown, which you saw actually, at Pacifica Spindrift Players. We did a production back in 2016, I think, or 2017. Easily one of the most seamless productions I've ever done, ever. It just, and like my role wasn't necessarily like a huge one. I played Marcy. She has similar glasses to the ones that I wear on the daily, so I literally wore my regular glasses for the role, didn't have to use prop glasses, which I thought was hilarious. And so probably Marcy in Your Good Man Charlie Brown. It was a cast with... I mean, I had a wig for the role, but like the glasses, like they were like, those are perfect. Like you should wear those. And I thought it was so funny. I'm like, oh, I thought I was going to get fun prop glasses, but it looks like I already look like a nerd for the character.
Yeah, that was a fun show. And you guys all seem like you were having a really good time too.
Oh, we were. It's like some of the best, like, stories from that show that I could, like, I feel like really encompass theater and like why I love theater as a whole come from that show.
Yeah. I know the feeling. Do you want to look a little bit at your designs?
Do we want to? Oh my gosh.
Do we want to?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
I'd be down.
Okay. I'm going to share my
screen. So are you going to go to my website or do you need me to? Okay. You're going to screen.
I got this. I got this. All okay. Right. Because I figure you're a graphic designer. Why not just go to your website and look at them and we can get... this will be an exclusive to the YouTube channel, my YouTube channel. So we're going to go through some of the things with Bella Tapia. Where would you like to start? Would you like... where would you like to start? You want to go graphic designs? Do you want to go photography? I think we should stay out of film just because of frame rate. And
yeah. Why don't we start with... let's do graphic design to start.
Okay. I think we've talked about a few of these already. I see stars. Oh, those are cool. Oh, let me readjust myself.
Wait, so are you in the, which one are you in?
Can you see me? Can you see me?
So I can see you, but it's not showing the site. If you're on my site, it's not showing my site on your end.
Okay. Let me see what I'm doing here.
I wish you could see this on my end. It looks hilarious. It's just like all of like Discord, just like doo, 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 doo.
Let's go. Entire screen. There we go.
There we go. I can see it now.
Perfect. Okay. All right. So here we are, bellatapia.com. So let's see. Let's just look at it. Let's look at this chunk of Icy Stars, Silent Sky, Circle Mirror, Transformation, Rumors, Two Across, Guys and Dolls, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. Tell me a little bit about this. Is this all next season or is this the season for PSP?
So it was going to be PSP's 2020 to 2021 season that was unfortunately canceled. So these posters were published, but then obviously the shows were later on canceled. So we weren't able to actually make most of these happen. Some of them are going to be happening at later dates, though, when, you know, COVID makes theater able to happen again, you know?
When you're creating these graphics, what is kind of the, tell us how, like, you kind of start the process. What are kind of the ways that you think about all this, like when you're creating your product?
Yeah. So when it's with Pacifica Spindrift Players, so they were going through a giant rebrand maybe like a year or two ago, and I was helping them out with that rebrand. And so we'd come up with a general style for them, and you can kind of see that it all follows this really like this like flat design. It's really simple graphics. So the formula for Pacifica Spindrift players is they like a title that pops. They like a really fun, solid color background, like a solid color background that pops too. And then usually one graphic or like minimal graphics, unless like the theme of the show calls for anything more. So when I'm working on Pacifica Spindrift player stuff, if I know the show well, I generally can come up with an idea pretty quickly. I try to stray away from, I'll research other posters from other productions on like a quick Google search, and I'll see what they're doing and do the opposite usually, or I'll try to do the opposite. So for Guys and Dolls, a lot of it was with the dice and stuff like that, which was super cool. But I was like, I want people to know our Guys and Dolls production to be completely different. And it starts with the poster. So I thought about how it takes place in the city. And I was like, we should do this sort of like cross street sign. And that's kind of where I came up with the idea for that. Usually I'll look at what other people are doing and just do the opposite and try and find out other details of the show and have that serve as like inspiration. And usually after being like, okay, these are some notable things about the show, I'll do like a quick little Pinterest search and look at like different like other like illustrations of that item that I might be thinking of. So I'll look at, you know, for Guys and Dolls was looking at like, oh, like how are street signs drawn, or like how is a cityscape drawn, look at that kind of like inspiration and then go from there.
That's really cool. Are in any of these designs, do you add any kind of Easter eggs that maybe the normal viewer, the normal person who would see this poster wouldn't catch at first glance?
Actually, yes. So if you look at Two Across right there, I'm actually kind of glad that you asked that. So Two Across is show that's about two people that fall in love over crossword puzzles on BART. And so if you look inside that, if you look at at Joaquin's screen right now, the Two Across poster has it's an image of a crossword puzzle book. And if you look at inside the heart and the shape of the crossword itself is in the shape of BART, the BART route for the Bay Area.
Oh, wow. I could see it. Yeah. So, all right.
So it was kind of tough to make
happen. That's a nice little Easter egg there.
Yeah. So because I think, if I'm not mistaken, Two Across is about specifically BART, not like the subway in New York. It was like specifically like Bay Area transportation. Yeah.
I would not have noticed that. Let's keep moving on to some of the other graphics that you have. So we got Volunteer. We have the Pacific Spindrift Players logo. A streetcar named Desire, Legally Blonde the Musical, and Violet. I've never heard of Violet. Huh. All right. It's kind of a similar... Is Volunteer... Are all these Pacifica Spindrift player logos as well?
Yeah. So you have the Volunteer is for their website for anyone that wants to volunteer. That's the image that they'll see for Volunteer if we send out any emails. That call for volunteers, that's usually the one. And then the logo under is the logo that I redesigned for them maybe about a year ago. Which if you drive on Highway 1 in Pacifica, you can see the logo on a banner on Highway 1.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Very cool. Mm-hmm. All right. I know some of these faces. No, I don't really know anybody. Reverse Jam NBA podcast. Tell me a little bit about this one.
So Reverse Jam is an NBA podcast that some friends from high school had created. It was they like to just discuss like if I'm not mistaken, it's just like basketball, like week to week and like what happens. And so they just had commissioned me to come up with a podcast cover for them because they hadn't had one yet. And so I did that. And then if you see separately from them, you'll see actually Nightlight, a horror movie podcast. I donated them some artwork, drawings of each of their podcast members. And the colors that they're wearing is colors from their podcast logo. Yeah.
Oh, I think you referenced this logo.
Oh, yes. So this one was for, I think, I can't remember the name of the theater, but it was in San Francisco. They did a Queen musical review. And we were going through a few different design ideas, and then they really liked doing this sort of neon sign vibe to evoke this sort of 80s aesthetic, but while still highlighting their cast members for the show.
Super cool.
Yeah.
How about these guys?
So these are just random commissions that I did. So on the top left is AJ, who is actually my co-host.
Hey, AJ.
So I drew her. Yeah. So I drew AJ for just for fun initially, but then I was like, oh, this is perfect. I can use her photo for my website for the podcast portion. And then on the right, the large picture is actually an Edge alumni, Danae. It's a drawing. Yeah. So I just randomly surprised her with a drawing because I was like, oh, I want to be nice. And I like Danae and she's beautiful. So I like to draw beautiful things. So I drew Danae. And then on the bottom left is my friend Jessica. It was her birthday. So I did a drawing for her as a gift.
Here we are.
Yeah.
How about these guys?
So this was two...
When I say guys, I mean the elements, not like...
I know. So most of these, with the exception of one, were actually commissioned to me by nonprofit social justice groups in the area. They were referred to me by other theater people in the area and even sometimes referred by each other. And so it was just, they were like, hey, we want to make this art into stickers and sell the stickers. And whatever profits that we make from the stickers, it's going to go toward these different charities and organizations that support Black Lives Matter. And so I had done that over the summer. I have a huge care in myself because they gave me pretty much like free rein to draw whatever I wanted. And within the Black Lives Matter movement, one thing that I really care about is Black trans lives. As someone that feels like we don't focus on that element of Black Lives Matter enough, and this is just coming from me, just like a Latina woman who by no means is trying to insert myself in a space that I don't belong or like say that the movement is doing any wrong, but I really want to advocate more for our trans brothers and sisters. And so I wanted to have them in the spotlight because I feel like they're maybe not in the spotlight enough. So, yeah.
Yeah. I kind of had a similar kind of like discussion with myself about I'm not feeling like let's look at my background. Straight, white, mm-hmm. male. Like there's not a lot for me to say without me feeling like I'm trying to be like a hero for some people. When this podcast is being recorded, this is the day before Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I put out a video of something, just some stuff about his life and stuff that the King the King Center was doing, which mm-hmm. was the organization that Dr. King's wife established. I was trying to think mm-hmm. of like the safest way for me to show my support in the same way that you're mm-hmm. you were trying to show your support for Black trans lives too. Mm-hmm. And so it's always, as an artist, it's always an interesting line to cross when it comes to mm-hmm. not having the experience that these different groups are representing. And you want to show that you hear them. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you really, at the same time, you know that you're not, that might've been something that we really took from Edge too, is like, we're definitely not in the same position as a lot of people, but we see you, we hear you. Mm-hmm. Even if there's not a lot for us to actually do. Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you probably, I mean, I think you kind of hit this on, hit this head on just a few seconds ago. But for me, I never like taking up space that I feel like is not mine to take. And I try to be really wary of that. And especially when it comes to the LGBTQ plus community, I am bisexual. So I am part of the community. But I feel like there's this, even though I am part of the community, I'm like, I know that as a bisexual woman in a straight relationship, I don't face the same discrimination as other groups do. And so it's, I can never say that I have the same experiences as maybe a lesbian relationship, a gay relationship, or any other relationship pretty much in the LGBTQ plus community. Does it mean that I might not face discrimination for that or don't currently? But at least for me, I try not to take up that space because I know I don't have those experiences and that I don't face that discrimination. So the best thing I can do is, even though I am in the community, be an ally to the other community members, you know?
Yeah. Do you ever feel like you're, I guess this would be one of those situations where you're kind of, would you feel, what's the complex called? I'm losing my words. There's all sorts of conversations about this.
So, yeah.
At face value, you are like, no one would know that you're bisexual. And I think that's where you kind of feel like you can't really talk about it as much, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much what it comes down to.
Well, I see you. I hear you.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, for me, I think what it comes down to is this, is I've never made, I mean, I have technically, but I've never made it a point to make a huge post on like social media saying, I'm coming out. This is me and I'm here and I'm this sexuality. And I was very deliberate in making sure that I don't do that because for me, in my viewpoint, and just for me as myself in my own experience, the only way to destigmatize LGBTQ plus relationships is by not having to come out. And so for me, I'm like, it's not a big deal for me if I don't make it a big deal for myself. And it's taking away that stigma. If, let's just say, and I mean, I love David, but let's just say, hypothetically, if we were to break up, and 5 years from now or 2 years from now or whenever I was in a relationship with a woman and someone were to say, well, I thought you were straight. You never came out. Well, I don't need to come out. You don't need to come out if you're straight. So I don't need to come out if I'm bisexual. Taking away that stigma. I respect and I love anyone that has the courage to come out because it takes a lot. But for me, and just like, it's not like a thing where I'm not proud of it, but it's like, I want to take away that stigma. And I don't want to have to sit here and explain to people because it shouldn't be the sort of big deal that it is, you know?
Yeah. I have some stories for you for after the podcast, so we'll leave it for after the podcast.
Okay.
I think that's a great place to end.
Bella
is my official ending right here. Bella, yeah. I want to thank you for joining me for the show. To hear more from Bella, you can find her at bellatapia.com. That's BellaTapia.com. That's also where you can find links to all of her, any way to contact her, including soon a link to her podcast. Bella, is there anything else you'd like to say before signing off?
I want to thank Joaquin, actually, for thinking of having me as a guest. So applause to Joaquin if you are listening to this. Yeah, if you're listening to this at home, give him a quick applause, you know. so thanks to Joaquin. And I mean, I hope you guys check my stuff out and I hope you guys enjoy it. And there's more to come, a lot more to come.
Always. I'd love to have you on again. I want to thank you again for joining me. And oh, I almost forgot. We forgot to answer the question at the beginning of the episode. Bella.
Okay, what's up?
Are you afraid of ghosts?
Oh my God. Terrified.
Terrified. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Thanks for listening. The Walk Third Show with Joaquin Lewis as himself. Produced by me, Joaquin Lewis. Executive producer, Joaquin Lewis. Supervising producer is Joaquin Lewis. Talent producer is Joaquin Lewis. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Joaquin? Call the Walk Third Show hotline at 209-222-8320. It too can be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Walk Third Show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Walk Third production.